So I wanted to say a few words about metta practice further and have some time also for us to bring up any questions and share some of the experiences, and it'll take us miraculously to lunch. So first, just to say that the radiating metta, how many people found that you could click some with one of the forms of the radiating metta? Yeah, that's great. It's something to keep working with. It'll work better for some than others, you know, and at some times than others, but it can be a beautiful form. I actually kind of have a hybrid where I work a lot with the radiating metta, but I also even sometimes say the phrases at the same time and have the person in mind, but really it's grounded in the energy, especially the energy and the feeling. And then that second way of doing it, probably familiar, we often teach that. How many were familiar with that more, the guided meditation where we get the, let it get bigger? How many were familiar with that? Yeah, that's done some. And again, you can do that. How many people really does that work for, that second kind of radiating metta? That's something, I mean, I know I've been teaching for a long time. When I lead it, it's like the room is kind of in a good place, right? It seems to, for many people, that sort of guidance, working with the sense of the space, seems to really connect well with the heart energy. The principle, again, for both forms of radiating metta is that you first kind of get it going by whatever means necessary, and then you let the radiation occur. That's the core principle. Better to start with some way that can have it be strong. Now, for some of us, we might just go there and it might be have good energy in a moment or quickly. But if it's not that way, then use something like the phrases and the way we've been doing so far to get you to the point where it feels like it's radiating some. And if this doesn't feel like the radiation method is working for you, that's fine. You can work with another one, or you know, just keep putting some energy into it. So I wanted to just say a few words about metta and then have some open time for discussion. One of them is just to say that this whole notion of metta and loving kindness is audacious. It's not a word I use very much, right? It's quite a vision of what human beings might be, that we can actually be there and have as our main way of meeting the world and all beings a sense of warmth and kindness rather than a sense of me and them, or us and them. So, you know, some of you know the Metta Sutta, you know, this passage from the Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Wishing in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none. So with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world. As my colleague Sylvia Borstein often says, whoa. Right, that's a deep intent. That's what the horizon is for this practice. It's to be, you know, it's something that we work towards. How can we have that sense of kindness that's there more and more? So it's a practice, right? It's a practice that we cultivate. And this sense of developing an increasingly universal and present kindness is really found in multiple traditions. You know, I did some research once across traditions. This is from the Jewish tradition, from the Talmud. The highest form of wisdom is kindness. Right? This is from Thomas Merton from the Christian tradition. Our job is to love others without stopping to inquire whether or not they are worthy. That is not our business. And in essence, it is nobody's business. What we are asked to do is to love, and this love itself will render both ourselves and our neighbors worthy. Thomas Merton. And this is from the Quran, from the Muslim tradition. Shall I not tell you of something which, if you do it, you will love one another? Spread the greetings of peace among yourselves. Salam. Also from the Muslim tradition, Rumi. Love is the water of life. Drink it down with heart and soul. From Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. This call for a worldwide fellowship that lifts neighborly concern beyond one's tribe, race, class, and nation is in reality a call for an all-embracing and unconditional love for all. This has become an absolute necessity for the survival of humanity. When I speak of love, I am not speaking of some sentimental and weak response. I'm speaking of that force which all of the great religions have seen as the supreme unifying principle of life. Right? So it's that sense that we're practicing to have that get stronger and stronger, more and more present. Right? Now, in practicing it, this is the second point I want to make, is that there are challenges along the way. Do I need to say that? And so that's some of what we encounter, and maybe even encounter today. We may encounter various challenges. One might be distraction, right? I'd really like to develop loving kindness, but my mind's going here. My mind's going there. I'm distracted, right? I can't really concentrate, you know? That's something we can work with, staying with loving kindness, or maybe finding some other way through the mindfulness practice and being with the breath. We can develop in that concentration, be less distracted, right? Or know what to do when we are distracted. Another challenge that might come up is that we do find in our lives times that we are unkind. We are reactive. You know, we are filled with anger. That's not a loving anger. You know, or we are just have dissatisfactions come up. All sorts of things come up. And this is normal. That's again why we often talk about these heart practices as purification practices. And if we stay with the practice, it's a way to work with that, work with reactivity. Another major challenge in our practice that we can see sometimes when we look to metta for self is that for many of us there are challenges to being kind to ourselves, which again, it may be more than we find in other cultures. I think it is. You know, that there, and there are different reasons for that, I think, but how many of us find that there's often a strong self-judgment? Yeah. How many felt a little bit of self-judgment raising your hand? Right? And it's a very, very strong energy. And there's a deep kind of conditioning, and a lot of it goes way back, right? So it goes back to early childhood experiences often, or traumatic experiences, or difficult experiences of some kind. And there's a chance doing loving kindness practice, especially when we do it a lot, to work through some of these things. Of course, sometimes we need to use other kinds of supports like psychological work or trauma work. But there's really a potential, and I've seen kind of miracles happen teaching. I've been connected with the Loving Kindness Retreat at Spirit Rock for 17 years, right? You're doing it typically once a year, sometimes twice, for 1 week. You know, probably, you know, you add all the people up, that's many thousands of people, right? Some of you here have done that. And I've seen amazing things happen, you know, especially with that level of dedication and intensity. And so it really is possible to work through what blocks the heart. Some of it, difficult experiences that haven't been fully processed. Some of it, conditioning. You know, like I said, some of it's around gender conditioning at times in different ways. And that can go in multiple ways. That can go, for men, it's more the challenges of getting to the heart. For women, it tends to be more the conditioning that I'm there for others and not for myself. That's a strong conditioning for many women, right? Less so for men. And so we can work with all of these. We can work with those kind of issues. And so there are challenges that come up, but they're workable. And when we stay with the practice and get good guidance and, you know, use other things that help, the heart gets stronger and the loving kindness gets stronger. And last thing I wanted to talk about, and then we'll talk about it a little bit more in the latter part of the afternoon, is how to bring it into daily life. How to bring this practice into daily life. What I'm going to suggest is that for this to be a strong practice, we need to do it every day in some form. I sometimes say 10 or 15 minutes every day will keep it going pretty well. Of course, more is better. So you might want to bring it in to the beginning or end of your daily sitting, or find some activity where you can do metta. One of the secrets of, I think, of daily life practice is finding 1 or 2 or 3, 5 to 10 to 15 minute periods that you're already doing and bring something like metta into them. You know, one example that I think I've talked about a little bit here is that I've kind of every day have some activity that I work with metta. Often it's been, if I'm having a meal by myself, I do metta the whole meal, or at least 10 or 15 minutes in the meal. You can do that. So the key is finding things that do not take more time. Right? So you don't have another thing on your to-do list, right? That is a key. So finding, okay, I have a meal by myself, let's do it metta. And we'll have training in just a little while on how to do metta for lunch or for a meal. Another might be you take a walk, or you have in your day a way, I don't know, you take public transportation to work. A lot of people I work with, they take public transportation as their time for doing metta. You can do it that way, right? When I'm home, I do lap swimming, or when I'm in this area, not traveling, I do lap swimming 5 or 6 days a week. For the last many, many months, I do metta when I do lap swimming. One being per lap. I have a group of about 18 beings. My daily form of metta isn't so much to do exactly what we just did, but I have a list of people close to me, and I go through the list and kind of do 4 phrases for each of them and go through that. It can take 10 minutes or something. And, you know, some of them are more difficult than others, but they're all close to me, right? Being close to me doesn't mean that the metta always flows real easily, as you know. Didn't need to say that, but I wanted to. And so I do metta and lap swimming, and I have a rhythm. And if you have it connected with a regular pattern, for me to do lap swimming and not do metta would feel incredibly weird. It's hardly an option. It's not because this is what routines are about, right? You get into a routine, And your mind says, when I go swimming, time for metta. And I do not have a choice much. Absolute sense I do, but not really. Same thing, you take a walk every day, make it metta. You have to walk 5 or 10 minutes from your car to where you work, or take public transportation, make it metta. Make it part of your meditation. One other very important use for metta in daily life is that metta can be an antidote to distress. In the tradition, metta is understood as an antidote to fear. And there are stories about that in the text. But if you develop your metta every day, if you wake up in the middle of the night and maybe you're hard on yourself, there's some self-judgment, you can go right away to metta. Or if there's some difficulty, if you've been doing metta every day, it'll be strong enough so you can use it as a way not to get stuck in self-judgment or just anxiety about something. You can use it like that. It's a very effective tool, for distress when you're caught in distress. If the distress is kind of workable, mindfulness is very good with distress. Let me look at this. If it feels like it's a little bit too much, and in the middle of the night, almost everything is too much, right? We're vulnerable. You can use metta at those times. You could be at a meeting and you don't have an active role. Do metta. Okay, so those are some examples. A lot of this is when you get interested in metta, when people get interested in metta, they become creative and do all sorts of things. And so how many of you have creative ways of bringing metta to daily life that I have not even mentioned? Yeah, there you go. Maybe we'll hear some of them. Maybe that might be good. Why don't we use the mic? And if you just raise your hand, could you give a one sentence summary of how you use metta? Keep it to one sentence so we can hear from a number of people. You can just raise your hand.
At red lights, I send metta to every other car driver, and whenever I hear someone sneeze, I think mayday you will.
Well, driving was not yet mentioned. Metta at the red light, yeah.
When I find myself judging people positively or negatively or neutrally, I flip into metta.
Wonderful, yeah. Okay, I'll just drop in a comment, if that's okay. I guess I'm in charge, so maybe it's okay. Okay. So I did once 5 weeks of metta practice, like 16 hours a day. That was the most I've done in a row. And towards the end, I found that every time I made a comment about someone, even if it was positive, or if I was just noticing, and it wasn't connect with metta, I felt I needed to add metta to it. It was an insight from that period of practice. Please.
I'm just allowing you to this when you're in a long line or when you're at a market or something.
Long line.
So much nicer if you do metta for whoever, anybody, the clerk.
Long line at the market, long line for those people without fast track. Okay.
With people who are close to me and I'm close to them, I do it when I'm with them and I'm talking with them.
Yeah, great. So even bringing it into ordinary conversation. Others? Anyone else want to add?
It was maybe not out loud to them, but while we're talking about something else. Even.
Yeah, metta in the conversation, not expressed verbally, but in the heart. Yeah. Yeah.
That's a tough one.
Yeah.
Much easier to change to we for.
So changing the pronoun to establish sense of connection and warmth. Yeah. Maybe, was there anyone else? Okay. So this is great. So you can see the creativity, right? All of our practice is an invitation to creativity. Donna, did you have one that you wanted to share? There's the mic. Yeah.
It's not about people. I garden a lot, and I've been practicing metta in relation to my gardening, which expands into a sense of metta in relation to land and trees.
Yeah. Well, land, plants, yeah, of different kinds. Wow, beautiful. Yeah. And you could also, you know, I mean, if you're going hiking or walking in a beautiful place, you could do a form of the spacious, radiating metta just with the land. That's beautiful. So you can see it. Okay, last one, Mary in the center aisle. Yeah, so you can see the creativity, right? That all of these came out of people's own creativity, right? That's really, we emphasize a lot with metta practice, yeah.
When I'm walking, say, down to the bank from my office, which is about 2 blocks, to look people in the eye and think metta, you know, or to wish them metta,
well,
smile and...
Yeah, so people at the bank?
No, just walking toward the bank.
Just walking. So, yeah, you can do metta towards people on the street, metta in public spaces, metta during meetings when you don't have to do much. Great. So let me ask any other questions that maybe came up in, when we were doing the sitting. We'd had that more extended period, sitting, walking, sitting. Any questions come up about the practice or something you want to talk about that maybe could use some clarification? Yeah.
I found myself wanting to change the phrases to fit the person.
Yeah.
You know, say being more patient.
Yeah.
You know, calm mind, but for the purpose of.
Yeah. Yeah, thank you. It's an interesting question. And I would distinguish in terms of answering the question about do we use different phrases for different beings. In retreat, we generally say keep the same ones because we're emphasizing quite a bit concentration and kind of getting in the groove. And so, because when we have multiple phrases for different people, we have to think a little bit more to get it together. And so it's kind of a trade-off. So in retreat, we try to say stay with the same people, or if you're doing a long period, that would tend to be the emphasis. In daily life, we often say, do what works, right? Be aware that it could be a little bit of a trade-off, could be a little bit less concentration when you vary the phrases, but you might connect a little bit more with the heart, right? So see what works for you. But that could be fun. The only other point is when you have specific phrases for particular beings, try to make sure that there's not some judgmental energy. You know, we notice this. We haven't done the difficult person, but sometimes we say, "May you get it together." So be a little bit careful. Like, may you develop more patience. That could be coming out of a pure heart. It could be also coming out of something else, right? Like, you know, may you develop in these ways so it's not so difficult for me, right? So we call that sort of self-interested metta, which is we're trying to have it be more unconditional. So in general, so if we do the separate phrases, that would be a little bit of a danger, yeah. Okay, other questions or comments?
I'm very attracted to the general, broader meta reaching out to all human beings.
Yeah.
My own vulnerability in that, however, is how I become so instantly self-critical.
Yeah.
If I feel that way, why am I not working in the homeless shelter?
Yeah. So that's sort of how many people does something like that come up sometimes? I mean, that question can come up whether or not one is doing metta, right? So there are kind of two aspects of a response, right? The first is, and I think I'd probably emphasize this, that if that really is a sincere aspiration, act on it. A lot of us may have that, but we don't act on it. But I was just actually talking with someone yesterday who we were just having a session, and person said, I really want to make more of a difference in the world. This is someone who is a teacher, you know, and teaches probably 30 hours a week. And has a job, right? And but says, I want to impact on the world. And I said, what areas most call you? And she said, helping women and children, number one. And number two, the environment, right? And what we came to was, that's really sincere. What amount of time do you have available? And we came up with 5 hours a week, right? And then we brainstormed. Now, sometimes initially you have to do, sometimes you'll know what to do, but sometimes you have to do a little research. You know, so we brainstormed, okay, here are 8 different possibilities. Here are people to contact for options. So I think the first thing is to honor that and to act on it. And again, see what your amount of time is. And in doing that, you have to explore some to find the right fit. You're not going to get it right away. You may have to, you know, have a period of research and exploration for 3 months or 6 months or something. But if you know that, oh, I would really feel good. I have 5 hours. I'd really feel good if I found the right connection to do something in that 5 hours. Another person I work with was retiring and really wanted to be of use. And it took him a year or two to find exactly the right connection. But he is now tutoring kids who are a little bit behind in their schoolwork. And he's been able to bring all of them up to being current over a year. And he also teaches gardening. Took a little while to find that, but that's, you know, and some others might want to do more big issues, right? So it can take a period of research or trying things out. Some things will feel good, some won't. And then the other piece is, of course, be careful with the critical voice, right? But once you start acting in this way, the critical voice probably will probably dissipate. But you want to watch the critical voice and work with that. How many can relate to that question? Yeah, great. You're good. Thank you for bringing it out. Okay. Vera.
Just a quick statement. May you be held in love. Somehow, I mean, I've been trying to do loving kindness for decades.
Yeah.
It made it softer.
Yeah.
It made it less routine. I don't know, I could smile with it.
Yeah.
I probably did more consecutive loving kindness today, an hour and a half, than I've done in years. There's something about that phrase.
Wow, beautiful.
That just,
thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, it does it for me too. But it's like it's very personal, and you know, having been doing metta for like 40 years or so, over the years the phrases have changed, and that one probably came 5 years ago. Not that, you know, and it's some, you know, and it just came in one sitting. Another one came, may I rest in the awakened heart, also came like 7 or 8 years ago. It just came. It actually came from a question during teaching where I was using the language of just stay in the heart. And someone asked, what do you mean by stay in the heart? Do you mean stay in the emotions? And I realized I wasn't meaning stay in the emotions. I was meaning stay in the kind heart. Stay in the awakened heart. So that phrase came out of this back and forth in a question period. And so use some that are on the sheet or that you hear and just see what works for you. But some of them are going to click in some way, and just keep it simple, though, you know. So, great. Okay, please.
Thanks, Al. I found in the walking period that I got very easily distracted.
Yeah.
And I wonder if you have any general advice for when you're practicing that there's a specific way, and yet you're doing something else.
Oh, doing something
walking
else.
Walking. Or eating. Do you have advice for how to stay kind of concentrated?
And have you done much metta in walking?
No.
Okay. So some of it, and you've done a lot of walking meditation in general, and that walking meditation, you can be pretty concentrated, right?
Yeah,
so I would say it's just a more of doing it more, and it'll probably come quite easily. That'd be my guess. And so what can help along that way? Do the back and forth. Don't let your eyes do too much. Let your eyes be kind of soft and unfocused just enough to, navigate, not knock into things. Okay, and so the back and forth. If you're feeling distracted, you can stop. You could also, like I said, start by doing some familiar walking meditation that grounds you. Do that 5 minutes. But mostly, I think it's a matter of really staying, getting used to it. And you can use the same technique. You can keep the feel the heart energy. And you keep the phrases going. And so, and you're not really paying a lot of attention to your body. You're really doing it in terms of the way you do it, pretty much like we do it in the hall here. Okay, does that help a little bit? Yeah, mostly stay with it. I'd be confident. Yeah. Okay.